A big welcome to all our legends all over the world. Delighted to do episode 2 of our Catching Up Over Cocktails, a podcast where we get a chance to connect with our former players, an opportunity to reflect, reminisce on the careers at Lidl, and also take a look at where they've currently landed in their life and what they're currently doing. Today I'm catching up with one of the pioneers of the programme from the early days, currently the Director of Soccer Operations for FC Cincinnati in the MLS. Welcome, Danny McNally.
Hey Dave, thanks for having me.
Now, you're sitting there in your office at the training centre, Danny, but I'm here around the grapevine. You're about to open a $250 million stadium in May.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable, really, how fast this has all come together. May 1st will be, I was the first employee for the club, and that'll be 6 years I've worked for FC Cincinnati. And we built a training centre, beautiful. We got into Major League Soccer, which was an enormous lift, I would say. And then, the kind of the icing on the cake is the beautiful stadium we've built downtown Cincinnati. And $250 million. And I think it will be the best ever built in North America for soccer. And I think it's going to take us to the next level. And, we're all really, really proud of it,
Well, that's brilliant. Well, hopefully we can end up there at the end of this podcast. But I want to take you back to 1995, 96, if you don't mind. And just reminisce a little bit about what you were doing in your life in 95, 96. What was going on with you, and how'd you end up at Lidl?
Yeah, wow. It's when we said we'd talk about this podcast, Dave, it really made me think about back then, the mid-90s. It seems like a lifetime ago now. But I was an apprentice professional soccer player for Bury FC. I think we were in League One at the time, the club was. And I was there at 16, signed a 2-year contract. And that was in 1994. And I thought I would get a professional contract in 1996 when I turned 18. And it was all kind of like leading that way. I was doing quite well with the club. I was in the reserves in my second year as an apprentice, which is a good sign that you're probably going to get a pro contract. But the manager at the time got fired, a guy called Mike Walsh, I believe. And a new coach came in, and he was more in tune with signing older professional players to come in and do a job for them rather than the young players coming through. So probably about February, March of my second year, I was a bit getting nervous because all these older players were coming in and some of those younger lads weren't getting a chance. So it was a bit of a kind of a stressful time. And then, honestly, Dave, I remember it like this. We were playing Everton for the youth team. It was a home game for us. And we played the game. I think we drew 2-2. I seem to remember having a pretty solid game against a big club, Everton, a Premier League side. So getting a 2-2 was a good result for us. And then after the game, my dad said, like, there's a guy that wants to come round to our house tonight to speak to you about playing college soccer in America. And I was like, really? And he's like, yeah, he's a guy. I'm like, is he American? And he's like, no, he's from Accrington. He's from right round the corner from where we live. He went to Queen Elizabeth Grammar School, where I went to school, a guy, Dave Gregson, and he was impressed with your play today, and he's coming round to our house tonight, to talk about a school in Daytona Beach or something. I'm like, where? Do you know what I mean? I'm like, where's this? So, that's how it started. And then, I don't know how you remember it, Dave, but you came over to my house. I remember, my mum, I always remember my mum was always nervous when people came over to our house, so she made us all like cups of tea and like put a bit of dinner on for all of us. And my two little brothers were there, and my dad. And you came up, and I don't know, Dave. It was just a very like professional way you kind of like explained about the university. And I'd always done well in school as well, so my mum and dad were like, they really liked that element of it. But then, I think you stuck on a video of Daytona Beach at spring break, and I signed. I signed on the dotted line right there and then. But Dave, it was just like, it just seemed like an opportunity. It was almost too good to be true, really.
Well, I think for me, it was kind of a bridge in recruiting, because the year before we got, obviously I played at Queen Elizabeth like yourself, and I knew the independent school circuit was of a certain standard. And the year before we got Stu and Ali Murray from Repton School. And I felt like yourself coming from Queen Elizabeth, my dad's seen you play a couple of times, and he knew the independent school circuit. But the fact that you were not the independent school, but also involved in a professional environment, that was kind of a step up for us. to have someone who's kind of bridging that gap of having tried to get a pro contract. So yeah. It was a bit of a coup for me. And to be honest with you, I knew that the YTS trials were coming up and all the lads who were getting released were going to go to the YTS trials. Now, there were loads of colleges used to go to that. And I felt like if you went to that, you'd get snapped up. So my thought was, I'll get in early, I'll pitch him Daytona Beach, and we'll see if he'll see peace of mind. He can sign for us, and he knows he's going to Daytona. So I remember going up that massive hill in Darwin. You live right at the top of the hill. And chatting with your mum and dad and yourself and offering you a scholarship. And, you know, absolutely thrilled, because I knew you could play a couple of different positions very well, and you had such a good outlook on football and a professional outlook that I thought we needed. And I think that was a good bridge for us to kind of get the program going in the right direction.
Yeah, you've done well there, Dave, because it's funny you say that, because I signed for Embry-Riddle. I was like telling all my friends and that and my mates, I'm going to Daytona Beach. Like, you'll never believe it. It's unbelievable what happened. But then what happened about a month later is the PFA, Professional Footballers Association, called me. And they said, you've been selected to go to this tryout with like 30 players that are being released from professional clubs in England. And all the big colleges from the US are coming over, like, UConn, UCLA, Virginia, I think, were there. And, you're going to get about, five or six offers here, Dan, and you're going to have your choice of schools. And I said, but I've already signed. And they're like, well, where have you signed? I said, Daytona Beach. And they're like, There is no school called Daytona Beach. I said, no, it's Embry-Riddle University, Daytona Beach. And they were like, oh, okay. And I was like, but it looks amazing. And they were like, well, good opportunity for you. Go and enjoy it. And, man of my word, Dave, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, Bruno. Good for us, mate. Good for us that you came. Now, tell me through your first impressions when you got to Daytona.
So it was like, honestly, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche when people say it's like a different world. But as me and you both grew up in like the Blackburn area of Northern England, the contrast between Blackburn and, with no disrespect to Blackburn, but compared to Daytona Beach, Florida, it's two different worlds, Dave. You know, the sunshine for one, how hot it is, but just the outlook on life. I always find it immediately hit me where, people were really nice to me. And it was just like, not that people back home aren't as friendly, because they are, but they just take a bit more time to warm up to people. Whereas I was always struck as soon as I got there, everyone was asking me, how are you doing? And are you okay? And how are you? And I was like, yeah, doing well, thank you. Like, I couldn't believe how friendly everyone was. And just, you go down the beach, and it's like a different world, you know what I mean? And I was lucky because you mentioned Stuart Craig there, who was on that first podcast, and Stu had been there a year, and he was an English guy, and I got to Daytona about a week before pre-season started, and Stu kind of took me under his wing straight away, and as he well documented, I don't think there's a better person to take you around Daytona Beach than Stuart Craig. And by that time, everyone knew him, and he was easy. It was easy for me because I knew Stu, and yeah, but just a magical place, really. And then the facilities were really nice, Dave, at Embry-Riddle. Like, I think the athletic department had just opened up that wing, and it was really nice.
Yeah, I think you were lucky, weren't you? Because you came the year after we played down at the Richard Pettifield. You came for the opening of the stadium field. Yeah. Mm. Now you lived in the dorms, right? You first got there.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Who were your roommates?
Oh well, Brian Steck was one of my main roommates, and me and Brian were really on the team, and we had four other lads that tried out for the team, but they never made the team. But they were good lads, Sean and those guys, Chris, and good lads. You know what I mean? But Brian Steck was my roommate. You know, we were on the team together. Brian started on the team, obviously, so did I. But so we had a good group. There were six of us. And we had a really good time. They all kind of took me under the wing. I mean, I showed up with absolutely nothing. I didn't even have any bed sheets, Dave. Do you know what I mean? Like, I had nothing when I showed up. And they all took care of me, really. And that's what I'd say. I was so fortunate that I was just around good people, and they all kind of recognised that I'm a young lad from England, pretty good at soccer, but just a bit not knowing what else is going on. You know what I mean? And they all looked after me pretty well, and good people. But I actually stayed in the dorms for 3 years. I was in there moved into the new dorms as well in my sophomore year. And that was, that was a different experience. But it was, I loved the dorms. I loved being on campus. Me just, you know, walking to school, walking to your classes in the sunshine in your flip-flops was like, how good is this? Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's great.
Now, speaking of taking someone under your wing, didn't we recruit John Howard the following year from the same school? You lived with John, didn't you, for a year?
Yeah. John was a good friend of mine from back in high school. And as soon as I got to Daytona Beach, like, he was pestering me all the time, calling me. He's like, what's going on? You've got to get me out there. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. And, so, you know, you brought John over. And he was like, John's still there. And he's been, 25 years later, Johnny Howard's still there. And, you know, I think probably my goal of this podcast, Dave, is just to make sure that John still has a job with Embry-Riddle when I'm finished. You know what I mean? But I'm not going to stitch him up. But John was a legend. Yeah, John lived with us in the new dorms that first year, and it was just chaos. It was absolute chaos looking back. It was brilliant, though. Like, you just can't. Now we're all grown up, married with kids and all that, and we've all got tons of responsibility in your life. But they were just magical days, Dave. They were the best.
Now, what was spring break? It was pretty big back in your day, wasn't it?
It was massive, yeah. I definitely enjoyed it. Stu already said, yeah, we got some good jobs, me and Stu, down on spring break. We were selling these gold cards to all the people that would come down. So you'd like have the Canadians had come down for a week, and me and Stu were selling all them gold cards to get in all these nightclubs. And we knew everyone. Like, we knew everyone from all these places. Like, the Midwest people would come down. They would go crazy. In the sunshine, me and Stu knew everyone, and it was good times. But we had a good one. Was I think my sophomore year, the word had got out back home that Dan's in this unbelievable environment, like in Daytona Beach, and John's with him as well. So all our mates came out from school, and there was like 10 lads living in the dorms with us, which was obviously shouldn't have happened, but we just packed everyone in, and we just had a week, 8 days of like absolute carnage. It was amazing. One of my friends, I don't know the full details now, but I know he got kidnapped at one point from a nightclub, proper kidnapped, and it was a worry for a few days, but he's all right. And then my other mate, he tried to like get in someone's like Ferrari, as I remember it rightly, outside of a nightclub, and this bouncer like properly beat him up, and he was like the elephant man all week. Like, I felt so bad for him. He'd spent couple of grand coming out, and he got really, yeah, but it was just, Dave, it was a mad week. But good times, Dave, good times.
But you did take your football seriously. Talk to us a little bit about your football career at Riddle.
Oh, yeah, it was definitely. I mean, for me, the first 2 years were challenging for me, in that I think there was a shift between the first 2 years and the last 2 years in terms of the quality, Dave, of the team. And you know, looking back on my time, I came from that really like professional environment back home in England, where everyone was competing for professional contracts, and it was kind of a cutthroat environment, really. And then coming into the college system, and it could have been anywhere in American college, I feel, wasn't just Embry-Riddle. You know, a lot of the guys on the roster they're there for academics, they're there for all the great things that happen at US universities. And my mindset was still a little bit more, maybe too intense almost. Do you know what I mean? I remember one of my first training sessions, and, you know, the lad who was playing next to me in midfield kept not passing me the ball properly. Do you know what I mean? And he came over to me like wanting to give me a high five after practice and say, hey, Dan, I'll get you next time. You know, I'll pass it to you. And I'm like, don't high five me, mate. Pass me the ball. Do you know what I mean? That was more on my mindset. Looking back now, I'm more older and more mature, was that I was still in my headspace was still like competing to get a professional contract in England. And it took me 2 years to kind of really get my head around that this is a different experience. These are people, players that have so many different things going on in their lives. And but then, to be fair, Dave, the final 2 years, my junior and senior year, you did a great job recruiting really quality players. And those two teams my junior, senior year were absolutely outstanding. Like, the quality of training was excellent, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, it is, it does, even still today, it does take a bit of a mindset switch to go from, you know, playing and competing against your teammates for professional contracts in the cutthroat world of professional football, and then coming to a university environment where you're all kind of pulling together for the same goals and the same university, and, you know, it's, you're looking at your teammates rather than being opponents, you know what I mean? So it's, yeah. The mindset is still a switch, but I think you're spot on that the change in mentality in the team and the chance to have each recruiting class that came in got us a little bit better. And then I think 1998 was probably, we talked about it last week with Stu, but that the fact that we actually won a tournament in 1998 and what a tournament that was, by the way, turned the corner for us, I think.
Yeah, no, 100%. And we had, and like I said, we had a really good team that year. It took us a few weeks, maybe at the start of the season, if I remember rightly, to gel. But once we got some consistency, we went on a great run, and some absolutely quality players that year. I mean, Stu, obviously, Stefan in midfield, it was great. You know, we had some good senior leadership, and Brian Steck, you know, Thomas Eriksson, Connolly was on that team, Connolly Adolzian, and John Howarth, obviously. Just had a really, Keith Kelly was a really good player as well for us. Little Manuel was great for us as well. And we just had a really good team. And that tournament was really, it was a really good way to cap off that season because we were hosting. So we felt, I think during the year, Dave, a little bit of pressure. You know, we got to get in this tournament. We're hosting this tournament. Like, it's time for us to really do well. And yeah, it was, I'm interested, how do you remember that tournament?
Well, for me, it was like a turning point because I knew we had a good team. We were playing at home. I fancied our chances, but there were some good teams back in the conference back in the day. I think we were all kind of on an even par. But, you know, I think the game against Nova in the semi-final, we were 1-0 down after about an hour. I remember Dario making an unbelievable save from the centre-forward from Nova that kept us in the match. Yeah. And then we went on to win that. I think, I do remember you scored a penalty in that game, didn't you?
Yeah, I scored the. I remember that one. I scored the golden goal because it was still in the days of golden goal, and it just started. I think golden goal in extra time, and we got a penalty, and I smashed it in, and that sent us on our way to the final. You know, and it was just a great night. But then I felt that was the harder game. The Nova was a little bit of a team we always struggled against, and to beat them was a big. Was a big lift for us. And Dario Gravado, he was a roommate of mine. He's such a nice lad, Dario, and I think we brought him along because he was in the dorms when I brought all my mates over from England, and I think it kind of he grew up pretty quick, but such a nice guy, Dario. He's a good keeper, wasn't he, Dario?
Very good. So then going into the final that following night, I felt like we were on a high, and I always fancied us against St. Thomas, to be fair. But as the game, it was an epic match, wasn't it? I mean, the atmosphere in the crowd was unbelievable. We went up 1-0, they pegged us back. Went up 2-1, they pegged us back. And then we got a penalty. And how have you not taken that, by the way? How did Marcus Fowler take it?
Well, you'd have to ask Marcus that. No. What happened, Dave, is a bit of a... So I had an interesting end to the season. I remember it because I'd never really had an injury in my career at all growing up. But in that final, I think with about half an hour to go, I ruptured my groin in the game. I was properly like injured, and you know, it's different now with sports science and everything. And I just carried on playing for like 10, 15 minutes, and I couldn't walk. But with about 15 minutes to go, I just motioned over to you, Dave. I like, I got to come off here, or else I'm going to let us down. Do you know what I mean? Because I couldn't walk in midfield, and in midfield you got to play. So I can't remember. I think what happened is, I think I came off and then 10 minutes went by and we scored the penno. But then with 5 minutes left, another player got injured. And I think I called over to you and I said, Dave, just stick me back on. So I came on the last 5 minutes of the game, 100% ruptured groin. And I just don't know how, if you're young, you're just buzzing. And I just started running around for 5 minutes, but probably really hurt myself, but it was worth it, you know what I mean? And I see all the photos post game. I put on a good show anyway, like I was well happy, so yeah.
It's such a sense of achievement and feeling of emotions for that night. It was just like an accumulation of what we started when Stu first came in. And that was the end of his, he was the captain. It was the end of his career. Yeah. So to win it for him and the team on that night at home was epic. And I think what happened then was the following year when I was recruiting, it gave me something to kind of recruit with. It gave us some credibility. Yeah. So that following year in 99, we brought in Jonesy and Ben Keerton and Jasmine. And that really, really took us to another level. I mean, that 1999 team that you were the captain of, I mean, you had to be, there were some strong personalities in that team. You had to be right at it as the captain. And that was probably one of my favourite teams to coach.
Yeah, we had a wonderful team. I would, if I'm being honest, I would say the 99 team was a better team than 98, in my opinion, in terms of just the way we played, the quality of the players we had. Like Phil Jones coming in was an outstanding player, but Yasmin Kadrić came in and he was top class. Connolly Adosian was playing great. We just had from back to front like a really, really strong side. And you're right, I think the momentum from winning the conference tournament the season before kind of really like pushed us on, and I think we won 13 games in a row, Dave, that year.
That was a quality team. And probably the losing to Flagler in that semi-final was probably the most emotional roller coaster game I've ever coached in. We dominated the regular season. Our conference champions, we absolutely walked away with it. And then 20 minutes into the semi-final, we're 2-0 down and Mark Young gets sent off. So 2-0 down and a man down. And we somehow clawed our way back into it. I think you scored both, didn't you?
Yeah, we were. It was a shocker. We were so far the best team that year, and I think we could have done some damage in the national tournament if we'd have, advanced to it, because we had a really good side. And unfortunately, Micah, who was such a good player, Micah, it was one of them. Not really his fault. It was like, if I remember it rightly, Dave, the centre forward went through and he just pulled him back slightly. And it's just a natural reaction, and he got sent off. And then we're 2-0 down, 10 men, semi-final. In my mind, it's like the last game in college for me. And so I was emotional. I'm an emotional character anyway. So I was like really emotional during the game, probably getting everyone going as I did. I don't do that anymore. But I was firing everyone up. And I scored the penalty just before halftime that got us back in it. And then I think we got a free kick last minute. Probably, 40 yards out, Dave. I don't know. I'd say a proper 30 yard out. And it was just like, just smashed it in the top corner. And that was brilliant. And really then, the sadness of that game for me is that we went to extra time and we were, even though we were down to 10 men, we were by far the better team. I'd missed a couple of chances. And then they've scored a diving header. And I know the lad who scored it. He never did that again in his career ever. You know what I mean? And it was just, that's it. Sudden, just that's the end. And heartbreak, really.
And I just, a lot of people who aren't involved in college athletics just don't understand that feeling of that finality of that when that ball hits the net and sudden death and your career's over. It's like, it's such a numbing feeling. And I do remember we actually went, there was a pub, the Falcon, from the hotel where we were staying at. I think the whole team was down there drowning our sorrows after that. And it was probably good to get out of our system, to be fair.
Yeah, no, it was. It was memorable for sure. We all went down. And, I became a college coach myself, obviously. And I used to tell all the players, listen, your career's going to end. Do you know what I mean? It is coming to an end. It's 4 years. And there will be a game where it's your last game. And there's only one national champion. And so chances are you're not going to finish on the winning side of it, but personally I take a lot of pride, and maybe summed up my career at Embry-Riddle, Dave, that I left it all on the field. Like that game, I couldn't have played harder for the program. I led from the front and just willed us to the best of my ability as close to the finishing line as I could get us, so looking back, there's worse ways to go out,
Yeah, well, that's what, you cement your legacy as one of the true legends of the program, mate. That's where it happened. So, I mean, and then life after Riddle, you've had quite the quite the roller coaster ride, mate. I'm excited to hear about, you've obviously landed on your feet in an MLS club, but the journey to get there is quite interesting.
Yeah, it's a long way. You had me looking back on everything, and a very fortunate man, I think, in a lot of ways. But I went from Riddle, graduated, and went to Chester City in England as a kind of on trial. for 3 or 4 months, and they were interested in me staying along, but you know, it just felt like I was a bit part player there. And then the summer hit and pre-season wasn't for 2 or 3 months. So I remember reaching out to you, Dave, and you sorted me out with a UK Elite Soccer in New Jersey, which is a coaching company. And he's like, you were basically saying, get yourself back over here and let's see how it works out. So I went working in New Jersey, just thinking, let's see how this goes for 2 or 3 months and see if anything shakes my way. And had a great time there, by the way. But fortunately for me, that should be its own podcast. I won't even go into what happened in New Jersey. But I ended in so Joe DiPaolo, who's a really good friend of mine, your former assistant, Dave, who's pivotal for me in so many ways. He offered me the job to go down to Nova Southeastern University, of all places, to be his assistant coach. So I was like, put the phone down, gone. I was out of New Jersey in a heartbeat. And I had made my way down to Fort Lauderdale again. And I was the assistant there for 4 years.
Now, let's just tie that in, because I know Joe will probably listen to this. Joe came down after his college career, and we had an A-League team for a year in Daytona called the Daytona Wolves. And Joe had come down to play in that. And yeah, he went belly up after about 4 months. So he basically knocked on my door in 1997 and said, Dave, I'll volunteer. You don't have to pay me. Just want to stay involved. Can I be your assistant? So, yeah, he was 97, 98. He was the assistant at Riddle. And then we had a whale of a time with Joe as the assistant coach. Mm. And then we were able to get him the job down at Nova in 99. And he did very well there. And that was a great time for us because, obviously, you know, loyalties and he knew you. So it was an easy one for him. A good loyal assistant coach that you knew personally. And that was a brilliant move for you, I think.
Oh, it was perfect. At the time, it's just exactly what I needed. I was able to do a master's. I did a master's in mental health counselling, which, you know, it went well. Actually, funnily enough, it's a good degree to get in your life, actually. You learn to listen to people, which is a good thing. Probably came around at the right time for me. But Nova was brilliant. 4 years there was magic. Really was a good time. Very, very good time in my life. But then I ended up in... I got the call from another assistant coach, Don Trentham, who worked for you as well, Dave, obviously. And he was the women's coach at Montana State Billings, which was a Division II school. And me and Don had kept in touch. And he called me. I remember I was driving outside the Nova Southeastern train right next to Miami Dolphins training center. And I was just driving past there thinking, wow, this is what a life, you know. And then Don's like, hey, you got to come up to Montana State Billings to be your head coach for men's soccer. And I'd never even thought about Montana once in my life. Never knew even where. I couldn't have even pointed it out on a map, I don't think. And but maybe something about me, Dave, that has always been good for me is I have a lot of self-belief and I take a chance. And I was like, you know what, I'm 27, but I'm ready for this and I can go up to Montana and make an impact. And I probably am the only 27-year-old in history who's left Fort Lauderdale for Billings, Montana. but I did. And then I left. I left Joe, loved Joey. I was talking to Joe yesterday. He's a really good mate of mine. He's a great guy, done brilliant in his career, just like you, Dave. He's two proper people that I've been blessed with knowing in my life. Do you know what I mean? You and Joe. But then went up to Billings, Montana, thought I'd be there for a stepping stone for a year or two. And I ended up there for 8 years. Just madness, really. Just all of a sudden I'm up in Montana and I really loved it.
You met your wife up there, right?
Yeah, Jenny. Crazy, but good story. So I'm up there in Billings, Montana, and it's a town of 100,000 people. And it's not what I'm used to. I've lived in Florida for 10 years and, you know, just what a place to be. And then, but Jenny was my dental hygienist. And, you know, I went in the first time to get my teeth cleaned by Jenny. And she comes in to clean my teeth. And I'm like, wow, she's beautiful. You know what I mean? How lucky am I to have a dental hygienist like that? Didn't say anything. The next two times I go in for my teeth cleaning, so that's like a year passes. I've never seen Jenny in the city at all. And I'm like, where is this young lady that's my, you know, cleans my teeth? The next two times I go in, don't get Jenny. Massive disappointing, you know what I mean? I go back the fourth time and I'm going in going, I hope Jenny cleans my teeth. And Jenny comes out, come on, Daniel, let's clean your teeth. And after she cleaned my teeth, she said, is there anything I can do for you, Dan? And I said, yeah, would you like to go out for a drink this weekend? And she went red, I went red, of course. And she scribbled her number on a piece of paper, and I ran out of there like really quick because I was well embarrassed. Got her number, called her, went out on a date that weekend, and I knew she was the girl for me. And yeah, we're married now. Two beautiful little boys, and yeah, lucky man, you know. But took a bit of guts to ask out your hygienist, Dave, you know.
Fair play, mate. And then from there, you've gone from Montana to Cincinnati, right? That's the next next phase.
Yeah, yeah. Went to UC, University of Cincinnati. I did well in Montana as a head coach. I think I'm the all-time winningest coach, won over 70 games in a short period of time. Really transitioned them, gave them some self-belief, and we started beating some proper Division II teams. And that's what I was good at as a coach. I think more than the X's and O's, maybe I was better at motivating people and making them believe in themselves. And we turned it into like no one wanted to play us in Montana. Nobody. All these big clubs came in from Seattle and California, and we were awesome at home. No one left there with a win, you know. The referees didn't like me in Montana. That's the the one group that, yeah, not very popular with the referee group. But yeah, I got the opportunity to become a Division I assistant coach, and I was there for 2 years at UC. And if I'm being honest, Dave, it was a good move for me long-term, how it's all worked out, but the experience wasn't great. Just, you know, all people, all coaches, all teams are different. And I was used to Embry-Riddle and then Nova Southeastern and Montana State, where just a different vibe. And it wasn't there at UC, and it didn't suit me. Maybe that was my fault, you know. But I fortunately landed on my feet with FC Cincinnati.
Now, tell us, how did FC Cincinnati start? How did you get in with them?
Very, very fortunate, really. So I, as an assistant coach in Division One, you know, I've got a family, a mortgage, two kids. I was supplementing my income coaching club soccer. And I ended up coaching this team, a U17 team. We had a good little team, but a guy called Jeff Birding, who's now the president of FC Cincinnati, I was coaching his son. And we became, you know, relatively friendly, you know. And another guy called Gary DeJesus, who was in integral at the start of FC Cincinnati, I was coaching his son as well. So they both like contacted me and asked me, do you want to go for a coffee? We've got a proposal for you. And so, yeah, I said, sure, you know. And I thought they were going to offer me the chance to become a director of the club. Do you know what I mean? That's what I thought they were going to do. But, you know, Jeff and Gary basically opened the laptop and said, hey, we've got this idea. We're going to start this club, professional club here in the USL. We have ambition to go to Major League Soccer. We're going to play at Nippert Stadium, which is a really nice stadium, University of Cincinnati. And they wanted me to be the kind of the president, you know, the director of soccer operations and stadium operations, because they recognized that I knew the game, had been involved in the game at a lot of different levels. And I could like organize a soccer operation for a new club. I could tell them what a soccer stadium should feel like. And we had ownership from Carl Linder, the most prominent businessman in this region. So I knew the team had backing. And yeah, I just went for it. I just felt that it was the right thing to do at the right time. Cincinnati is a really great soccer city, and I felt it could work. And so I took the job. I was the only employee. At the first, May 1st, I started 2015, working out of coffee shops, just on my own. And people, like, I remember the baristas were, the one girl, I used to go in this one coffee shop, and she'd be like, why are you here from like 8 a.m. to like 5 p.m.? Like, what are you doing? And I said, no, I'm working for FC Cincinnati. And they're like, who's that? I'm like, we're going to be a professional soccer club here in the city. And she said, do you think it'll work? I'm like, yeah, of course it'll work. It's going to be great. And, you know, but for me, I had never not done a proper day's work in my life, Dave. So I didn't like staying at home. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I like going and plugging my laptop in and like working out of a coffee shop for 3 months on my own, just putting all these thoughts and dreams and ideas together. And unbelievable, really. And then it started and it just exploded. Like, it's like a dream, and it still is how it all kind of came together, Dave. Unbelievable.
I mean, I've seen some of the crowds on game days. It's like a proper European feel to it, isn't it? I mean, the training centre is incredible. And this stadium, I saw some pictures of the fireworks the other night, or the lights. It's just nuts.
It's not. It's unbelievable, Dave. And like, we had the first year, we had Crystal Palace were able to come and play us in a friendly, you know, one of those international friendlies. One thing and another kind of landed in our favour. And I was kind of leading that charge and making sure we did it. And we sold out 35,000 seats in a day. The switchboard, like, melted. It was unbelievable. And, like, I'm there with Alan Pardew and all the guys from Crystal Palace. And just amazing, really. And the one thing I did, Dave, in the stadium was that, you know, I always love Liverpool's European nights. Do you know what I mean? When they play the Cop and all that stuff. And one thing in US soccer I think has been a mistake in the past is that they think a stadium should have all the razzmatazz and the, you know, the music and the halftime, whatever. And I was militant about, like, it's the football, it's the soccer, it's the passion, it's the energy you bring from the fans that make it. Do you know what I mean? The Liverpool, the Cop and the Blackburn End, where we grew up at Blackburn Rovers, it's the feeling, it's the emotion, it's the energy. That's football, that's soccer. And we have got to do that. And we have a section behind the goal called the Bailey that brings that passion. And that's it was such a hit in this community. People wanted to go to our stadium to watch the football, but also to feel part of soccer community. And, you know, maybe in my life, loving the game like I do and having passion for it, I was able to inject that a little bit, you know?
Well, the nice thing is, and I look at this now and I look at your little boys, and I probably wouldn't have said 20 years ago that two little boys growing up in America get to be around a soccer environment like that. They must be absolutely just, I mean, it's like we grew up. It's that similar environment, right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's been awesome. They go to the games and then the new stadium will be, you know, unbelievable for them. But yeah, my boys have walked out with, you know, I've pulled a few strings, Dave. So they walk, Liam, my eldest boy, he's walked out hand in hand with Wayne Rooney when Wayne Rooney was here. Kellen, my littlest, he's a character, he's Kellen. He walked out with Zlatan. Oh, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. It's quality, right? You know, so it's good. It's been good. And, you know, getting to MLS and playing games on national TV has been, it's unbelievable, Dave. I can't really explain it on a podcast, how it's all come together, but yeah, I'm very proud of it.
Well, I'm sure all the lads who are listening are thrilled for you and proud of you. And, you know, it's wonderful that we have an alumni involved so heavily in such a massive operation like MLS. Just tremendous.
I'd love to have what we should do when the stadium's up and running and we're through this COVID stuff, hopefully next year, maybe. We should have an Embry-Riddle, maybe love to have an Embry-Riddle soccer reunion up here.
Well, where we can get a great idea.
Get some tickets for the guys and come up and enjoy an experience, you know?
That'd be absolutely brilliant, mate. Just listen, while we're at it, any shout-out? I mean, there's quite a few alumni listening to these podcasts. Any shout-out to lads from the past you want to give?
I mean, it's Dave's, the people at Embry-Riddle, when I played there, were just great people. They all looked after me. You don't realise how important that is when you're 18 and you come over to America. But the amount of people that help me is just, I'm so fortunate. And I really believe that now. Like, obviously yourself, Dave, you've had a massive impact in my life. But Joe DiPaolo and like, if you think about, like, Mike Cole, a guy that is down there, I still believe he's in Daytona. Mike Cole, I used to coach Mainland High School JV team with Mike, and he looked after me, like, literally buying me meals so I survived. Do you know what I mean? He was big. But some of the, you know, I don't want to miss anyone out, but, you know, guys like Phil Jones is still a good mate of mine now to this day. Obviously Johnny Howarth, we'll be tied to each other till the day we die, me and him. You know what I mean? But John as well, though, I know, you know, he's what a servant to Embry-Riddle over the years, as a player, as a coach, a few other things as well. But what a guy. And but Stu, Thomas Eriksson, you know, Brian Steck, Yasmin Kadrich, Manuel, Stefan Oreston, what a great player. Per Finstrom, you've got to get Per on the podcast, but a great lad. Thomas Eriksson, who's, you know, I know, I think he still lives down there, doesn't he, Dave?
He does, Tom, doesn't he, Tony, yeah.
You know, what a player Thomas Eriksson was, and it's such a, I would say, maybe the shame that, unfortunately, it was a shame that what a team we would have been if Thomas was fully fit. he had some injury issues, but he would have been unbelievable for us if he'd have been fully fit, you know. And Jose Garcia, what a lad. Like, just what a lad. Just good player. Really good player. But, you know, yeah. Eric Connolly, dependable left back. Dario Gravado. Keith Kelly, heart and soul of it all behind the scenes. Just top lads, all of them. And if I've missed anyone out, I apologise. But just great, great, great guys, you know.
Now, let me ask you this. What, obviously, we've got the current lads, and we've got a really, really good squad right now. I think you're on the verge of doing something quite special. But what, you know, from your experiences, what advice would you give to the current lads listening?
Simple for me is like, it's the 4 years in college, university, and the 4 years you've got the opportunity to play in Daytona Beach, Florida, for a great coach in a great program that means so much to so many people. Enjoy it and get the absolute most out of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you'll never have this time again. You'll never have this moment again in your life where you're just with the guys, having good times, having a laugh. You're living no more than 5 miles from one of the best beaches on the in the world. You're playing soccer in a beautiful location, palm trees, great coaching, great school, great academics, and it's just get everything out of it. Don't stress too much. Don't worry too much about things. Just enjoy it. Do well in school and enjoy it, because life comes pretty quick. And for every ups, I've had my fair share of downs as well. And like all the lads, all former lads, I'm sure we've all had them. And soon enough, you'll have plenty of responsibilities. So enjoy this time. Enjoy this time. That's what I'd say.
Well, this has been, obviously, we could go on for hours with this. It's been absolutely brilliant to catch up, mate. But if you could, before we wrap up, maybe just one, your favourite football memory. And then remember, this is going out to the world. So a relatively PC favourite story from your career.
No, I definitely understand that my favourite stories have got to be podcast worthy. But no, all good. I have a couple. I've actually, one of them's just funny. No one else might find this funny, but I don't know if you remember this, Dave. I used to have to work at records and registration.
Yeah, Val Cruz.
With Val, you know, Val Cruz and lovely people, all these old ladies. And there's me filing records and registration in the old days. Just, I was useless. But I was there, and you know, I, like a lot of us at the time, wasn't spending all my money probably on going grocery shopping. So for lunch this week, I just had, like, I was literally baking a baked potato. That's all I had to eat for lunch. So I've gone into records and registration, which is a 3-story building at the time, and also admissions were in there. And at like lunchtime, I've gone in, put the potato in the microwave, and pressed on, and I didn't exactly know how to do this. And I think I've put it in there for like 20 minutes. I've gone back into my area, and slowly this smoke starts coming down the hallway into the records and registration area where I'm at. And all these older ladies start screaming, the place is on fire. And I'm like, oh no, it's that baked potato. I forgot about it. I ran into the kitchen, and it's just like a nightmare, like smoke everywhere. And then all of a sudden, the worst thing that can happen, alarm goes off. The alarm goes off. The sprinkler goes off in the kitchen. Everyone's screaming and panicking. And Dave, the whole building had to leave the premises. And then all the fire engines showed up. And I'm just stood there like, oh no, they're going to send me home to England. Like, there's no way I'm going to get away with this. And they're like, this big fire chief came over to one of the ladies and said, how did this happen? What's going on in there? And she just looked at him and went, some young English guy didn't know how to bake a potato. I'm just like trying to hide, just dying. But yeah, escaped that one. Somehow they kept me working, and they let me work there for another year after that. So stupid, really. But I'll tell you a good story, Dave. Like, that's an interesting one. But Stu talked about a guy called Adam Holdsworth, and everyone from my generation at Embry-Riddle knew Adam Holdsworth. Never played for Embry-Riddle. He was a student, allegedly, at Daytona Beach Community College for a year. But he was just such a top man. He was life and soul of the party off the field. He was Stu's mate from back home. And we went in a club called Razzles, which was the place to be, right? It was massive at spring break. And Adam thought he was like a dancer, like a really good dancer. You know, like all guys, we all think you can throw a few shapes, but we're all terrible dancers. And we all recognize that. ads, thought he was like ready for MTV. He was a proper like, you know. And anyway, we're in this nightclub, it's spring break and everyone's there. It's really loud and all that stuff. And over the loudspeaker, they say we're having a male dance competition. And me and Stu are winding ads up like, oh, you got to do it. You've got to do it. You're the best dancer we've ever seen. And he's having it, you know, so he's up for it. He disappears and he gets to the front. And then at the time, the dance floor was like in the middle of the entire nightclub. And this place is absolutely packed, hundreds of people. And they five of the lads come out who were doing the dance. And it's these four enormous, like American, like workout guys that are huge. And there's little skinny Adam Holdsworth in line. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be amazing. But he's second in line. And the guy everyone's going wild. And the DJ says something like, and now Rob from Tennessee, the music comes on and he goes into the center of the dance floor, but he's not dancing. He's stripping. His shirt comes off, pants are off. And then me and Stu look at each other. And the second me and Stu looked at each other, we made eye contact with Adam Holdsworth. And it dawned on all three of us at the same moment that ads is in a stripping contest. And honestly, Dave, you had to be there, mate. But to this day, I have never laughed as hard in my life. I was crying, like my stomach was hurting. When I think back to it now, just looking at Stu, and I think Keith Kelly was there, we just couldn't believe that he's got himself stitched up like this. And this guy's running around and like he's done his dance and everything. And here's Adam Holdsworth from Nottingham. And he walked out to the middle of the dance floor and started dancing. And honestly, Dave, he's done well. I can't remember what he did. And fair play to him, he went for it. But to this day, when we all realised what he got himself into, I've never laughed as hard in my life. Honestly, yeah. What can you say?
Go on, just finish us off with your favourite footy memory.
Oh, my favourite football memories, so many of them at Embry-Riddle. I scored my home debut, I scored two. I was centre-back. You played me at centre-back that first year with Stu, and I think we're playing Palm Beach Atlantic, and we were 0-0 with like 20 minutes to go, and I kind of stepped up and scored, dribbled through and scored a couple of goals, so that was a good way to start. But then, yeah, my favourite memory is the game winner against Nova Southeastern in that conference semi-final. That was great, but the most memorable moment was the free kick in my last ever game. You know, like you said, Dave, your words, 40 yards out. No, it was a long way out, and just hitting it in the back of the net. It was a pressure moment, like 2 minutes of the season's over, and it was just a great feeling, and the lads, yeah, it was awesome.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was an Icelandic keeper, right, and he just played in the Champions League qualifiers in that summer against Nicolas Anelka. And he'd come into Flagler mid-season because he was doing Champions League qualifications in Iceland. And I believe you've stared him down. He knew where you were going. You know where you were going. And you just lashed into the top stanch.
Yeah, yeah. Just one of them, wasn't it? I think I ended his career. I don't think he played again. No, I'm only messing. No, it was a good moment that day. But I'd love to get across because we don't get many chances to do this. And we've all gone our separate ways. But just a huge thank you to you, Dave, for signing me. All the great days and just unbelievable 4 years I had at Embry-Riddle. And again, all I would say is just a huge thank you to all the boys, all the guys that played with me. All of them looked after me. And all the things that go well for me in life, I think a lot of it is because of that 4 years at Embry-Riddle.
Well, mate, this has been an absolute thrill for me just to catch up and see you again. You know, I know you didn't get down to the alumni reunion last time, and hopefully when things clear up and we get a chance to get together again, we can have a couple of swift ones and keep reminiscing. But thanks for your time. I know you're really busy. You've got to get to a massive meeting here and look after your team. But we're so proud of what you've accomplished, mate, and we keep following your career. And thank you again for giving your time for all the lads. And I'm sure they'll love this podcast. You've done a brilliant job. So thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate it.
Cheers, mate.